This is the Paula Gordon Show. We are with Dr. Richard Jackson at the CDC, the National Center for Environmental Health in Atlanta, and serving the world. The business about building a sense of what needs to be known and then doing things about it would seem to me to be daunting. How do you begin to take these very important issues out in the world? And the CDC touches the world. It's the American government's arm, and we all look to you, but you have a big impact in the rest of the world as well. For instance, issues around children. That's our future. That's the whole planet's future. How do you begin to think about how do you get people to follow as well as to lead?
I've had a lot of fun in my career. I have actually the most interesting career of any one I know and any doctor I know. I'm very lucky because all the issues that I deal with are absolutely fascinating. Particularly in my career in California, I was very concerned and interested in pesticides in food, pesticide hazards to communities and the rest. And there were some radical ideas that we had back then. One was that chemicals that caused birth defects or were pretty powerful cancer causers should not be used in our food.
That's pretty radical.
And that in the early 1980s, that was very hard to push that issue through. And people would say, oh, that's just test animals. You don't have any proof in humans. Well, of course, getting proof in humans where humans don't know really how much they were being exposed to, and they're not going to get cancer for 20 years, 30 years, and maybe in this one chemical they won't get it, another one they will. Doing those studies was very, very hard. But over time, by actually evolving the messages and being able to articulate the importance of protection, we were able to put in place the Food Quality Protection Act nationally, laws in California as well, number one, to fill the data gaps on chemicals. Remember during the 1980s, it seemed like every month there was some chemical that was causing a problem? Well, what was really going on is these were chemicals that had been used for 20, 30, 40 years. No one had done the testing. They'd do the testing and they would discover, oh my God, at doses that farm workers were being exposed to, pups, dogs would be having abortions, blind puppies, and all the rest. We don't think we should be exposing humans. So it went from a radical idea to common sense. We had an idea that solvents, and by this I would mean chemicals like dry cleaning solvents, perchloroethylene, things that would be used like that, should not be dumped in a municipal landfill. Radical idea. People, what do you mean we can't dump this stuff into a landfill? Well, nowadays
it just goes into the dirt.
Right. And nowadays, of course, it's common sense. You just would not do that. So we have had a genuine evolution in each of these areas. In the last couple of years, I've become very interested in how we design our communities and build them. And the diseases of the 21st century will be chronic diseases. They're going to be obesity, inactivity, depression, osteoporosis as we get older, diseases of an aging baby boom generation. One of the best things all of us who are baby boomers can do is to exercise. And the exercise that most is the healthiest and safest for humans to do is walking, climbing stairs, walking. And yet we have designed communities that inhibit, almost make it impossible for someone to go about an ordinary walk.
I dare you to go walking.
My kids in North Atlanta could not go to the library, to church, to school, or anywhere else, either walking or on a bicycle. They had to be driven to every one of these locations. And so my wife and I would often wonder why we were so exhausted. We were spending, a lot of our income just on transportation and cars, and a lot of our time on chauffeuring. And our kids weren't all that happy to be with us after they'd been sitting around all day at school and all day in a school bus or in a car and being chauffeured from one activity to another. They never had the space or time to actually do what I did as a kid, which is to go to the local park, meet a bunch of buddies, and do a pickup touch football game or softball game or something else.
Or just have 20 minutes to walk home from school.
And just tease each other. Even that kind of a space we've lost in many ways because of being in such an automobile-dominated society. Automobiles are wonderful, but, you know, we should own them. They shouldn't own us.
What a concept.
I think you're answering it, but I'd like to formulate it, going back to what you were talking about. Do you have a sense of what the radical ideas today are that will be commonsensical looking forward? And I assume that's part of your job.
You know, I'm really sort of implying that with my answer. What I'm suggesting is 2 years ago, I was getting criticism when I was suggesting that cookie-cutter developments with very low density where only automobiles would work and walking or bicycle trails was being discouraged, and that we should, in essence, pretty much require that communities have be pedestrian-friendly, be kid-friendly, be disabled-friendly, be elderly-friendly, be bicycle-friendly. That was seen as a pretty extreme idea. And yet, as we're realizing that the big morbidity, the big disease entities in our society are chronic diseases, they are absence of physical exercise and the rest, this is becoming much more common sense. The developers are discovering, as they do polling data on people going in to buy homes in areas, that one of the things that people want is an ability to walk, bicycle, exercise, and talk to their neighbors.
You spoke in passing twice now about depression, and there are a lot of folks who do not understand that this mental illness, this disease, is the most debilitating disease in the developed world.
Depression is the most common chronic disease in the United States and worldwide. There are physicians whose practices, 30% of the adults coming through the door are being treated for depression in one form or another. The treatment for depression is social engagement. It can be psychotherapy. That's a kind of social engagement. It can be medication, and some of the medications are absolutely wonderful, and people should take them. It's much better than being immobilized and sad with depression. But the other treatment is physical exercise. Physical exercise works as well as a number of the SSRIs.
The Prozacs of the world.
Yes. I didn't want to name a brand, but that's right. And by the way, the social engagement, you can either build communities that enhance social engagement and have places of the heart, whether it's a cafe along a sidewalk or a place to meet your neighbors. And, I've often thought, or at least wondered, 20 years ago, if someone said that there would be page after page in the Washington Post of singles ads, of Lonely Heart ads, you would say, oh, no, that couldn't happen. If you said 20 million hits on a Match.com website, I think in part this is going on because we've created environments that make it very hard for young people to meet each other. They work 10 hours a day. They commute an hour and a half each way. Who's got time for a social life after that?
Presumably, there were not people sitting in a room, a cobble of people trying to figure out how to create unhealthy, unpleasant, inhumane spaces. These things sort of develop. And I think we all want to demonize and find somebody to blame. But I would assume it's a much more richer and much more complex. But that complexity, I think, would also make it hard to change. That you're dealing with amorphous counterforces to the kinds of environments you envision.
I'm going to dispute that, because I think actually there's been a conscious decision to build the way we have. In many countries around the world, the infrastructure is designed. The roadways, the schools, the parks, the retail, and the rest. The water systems, the sewer systems, and the rest. And then the dwelling units, the housing, is then built around that. In the U.S., we do it exactly the opposite way. We put in all the housing, and then we try and retrofit the infrastructure to all the housing that we've developed in those same areas. And in part, that's been incentivized by, one, the subvention, the support, the money we provide to highway transportation, cheap gasoline, and mortgages. And we all love being able to deduct our mortgage from our taxes, but in a lot of ways, that is another incentive to build bigger and bigger homes further and further out. Although I think the big driver for people to move out to suburbs in many ways is schools. And until we create safe and attractive and high-quality schools in urban areas, people will be drawn out from those areas.
This is Dr. Richard Jackson. He's a pediatrician early in his life. He is now the director of the National Center for Environmental Health at the CDC. We, Bill Russell, and I are with him here in Atlanta. We hope that you will be with us when we return.